Delaware, which was passed last September. Sit down near a shop, go to jail. The head of the program several months ago admitted to me that at least half of their work was police work. So I don't see them as hospitality people at all, or hosts, as Catherine Byers originally described them. I think that instead they're enforcing inappropriate laws, just like laws against apartheid were enforced in South Africa, just like laws against the blacks were enforced in the South and in the North, you know, for many years, and are still being used. Illegal practices of discrimination are still being used. The purpose of these laws is to give the merchants a tool for removing unsightly people they don't like, for removing political protesters they don't want to hear the message of. That's what the bottom line on these laws is. So the question is, what can be mediated here? Well, I propose a number of issues for these mediators to consider. I suggested that they might actually be of some use in particular disputes between particular merchants and specific people. So, for instance, I met a man who was lamenting that he had been harassed by a merchant down at the Cafe Bene area. And he told me that he had been threatened by the merchants. He told me that they told him to stay away, not just to stay away from the store, but to stay away from the block the store was on. And I know that the same merchant had come out and harassed other homeless people. Now, rather than pick up the cudgels and mount a crusade against this merchant, which might not be such a bad idea, and I may yet do, there is a role for a mediator to come in and say, look, go to the merchant, what's your problem? Go to the person he has a complaint with, what's your problem? Instead of what's happening now, which is this man whom the merchant went after has several disturbing the peace tickets that he has to answer for in court. And that is an expensive process. That involves a lot of court time, police time, and it also makes for a lot of hostility and polarization. It does employ lawyers. I mean, we can say that for it. But there is an alternative, and that is a mediation process whereby there actually is a folks assigned who will mediate. And perhaps a set of ground rules so that, for example, someone is evicted from a cafe for whatever reason, that after a month, that person can again meet with the cafe owner and come back in, or unless, of course, we're talking about some violent thing. I've been particularly conscious of these kinds of evictions where they've concerned homeless people and homeless activists. I myself have been barred from the Java House Cafe because I was accused of writing on the walls of the bathroom, let Wanton Dave back in. Wanton Dave is a homeless activist who has been barred from the Java House Cafe for 3.5 years. And what was his crime? His crime was he smoked a joint half a block away on the sidewalk of the Java House, and a building inspector walked by and complained to Kevin, the owner of the Java House, that this would imperil the Java House's attempt to get a license for its backyard area, even though Wanton Dave was half a block away from the Java House. And in order to secure their credentials, the yuppie management of the Java House told Dave he couldn't come back into the cafe. And we attempted to mediate this issue with the cafe, and the cafe wouldn't budge. And they then accused me, after I'd written about this issue in my publication, The Street Shit Sheet, which comes out occasionally. And
Java House are pigs. They just accuse anybody they don't like their vandalism. What does that mean?
It's a man on the street is coming up. Perhaps an interview with this man might be appropriate. Up too late.
It's not even interesting. It's always the same. They just do the exact same thing.
So apparently, the Java House, I've heard about it in 3 or 4 cases at least. This is about the 5th or 6th that's been mentioned. I believe that, but again, the point here is not for me to attack the Java House, though I would like to see people raising these issues with the management of the Java House and saying, why are you barring Dave Jacobs, Robert Norris, a variety of other people from the Java House? Why not have a position whereby, you know, people can use these areas, these public areas, provided they pay the usual fee, provided they don't abuse the area, that sort of thing. Anyway, there should be a mediation mechanism once a dispute arises where the merchants don't have this all-powerful status, where there's a different kind of attitude. That was one of the issues I proposed for the mediators. It's real hard to get people who are poor organized to fight these things. And ironically, that usually happens when some horror happens, like the downtown arrests that happened last May 11th. Actually, May 4th was the catalyst for the May 11th arrests. At that time, Food Not Bombs, which served every week at Cathcart and Pacific and still does, and gives a free meal to poor people, was ticketed by police. Actually, the food givers weren't ticketed. It was the people who were eating the food sitting on the sidewalk who were ticketed in an attempt to move them on. And the next week, hundreds appeared and sat down. And there were no more tickets after, there was a lot of ticketing on that day, but after that day there were no more tickets, so. Except for the occasional sitting ticket, which I've mentioned to you. I mean, that law is still in force, and you have to keep your eyes open because police are using it to move people along. But it seems that in order to resist and to organize, there has to be some catalyzing incident, some important explosion of a certain kind that happens that mobilizes people. And maybe that's the way it is in laid-back Santa Cruz. You know, maybe that's what's required. It's too bad, because it would be nice to be able to organize people around these positive possibilities. Maybe it's that the positive possibilities seem so far out of reach and so far from the agenda of the city council at the moment that it has to be around the issues of police abuse, discrimination, and so forth, that there could be any kind of organized protest. But organized protest has done positive things in this town. It's produced responses where discussions would not. It's produced, if you want to look at a series of accomplishments for protest, they range all the way from the River Street campground area, the Civilian Police Review Board, the current free meal program, and I would say even the current laid-back situation on the mall. I don't know how laid-back it really is, but at least people are not being arrested with the frequency they were being arrested last May, a year ago, because people stood up and said, we won't tolerate a police state in Santa Cruz. We will not tolerate it. You try to do it, we'll be there to stop it. We'll be there loud, we'll be there angry, we'll be there asserting our right to be there and to maintain the traditional Santa Cruz, which is a meeting of many different lifestyles, many different voices, and many different feelings. And I'm going to go grab myself a glass of water, and you get to hear some of this exciting music. But Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides will be back. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM.
Try too hard, he never changes. While I was a chameleon, try too hard to entertain them, so I'll end up who I was. Life goes through many. all of you who wanted better for me. Here I am to read your minds. While the rain fell down on Comac Road, your expressions I have left behind. Left behind for an heir apparent. Left behind for a change of heart. If I could understand his reasons, would I mimic him somehow? Oh, life comes from any echo.
Yes, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. And hey, who should come into the studio but our wobbly representative, that wobbling guy, the notorious, the vicious Pumpernickel Peter, as I have called him, or PJ Peter, or just PJ. PJ here has an announcement about, for all you labor militants out there.
And for anybody in the community, the Saturn workers would like the word to go out that from 6 p.m. to midnight on Sunday, and from noon to midnight from 6 p.m. to midnight on Saturday and noon to midnight on Sunday, they're going to be walking the picket line, doing an informational picket to let folks know about their current situation at the Saturn Cafe. And they ask that anyone that supports them come on out and walk the line with them. The situation that they're in is 19 out of the 22 workers there have signed union authorization cards, and they're just wanting to be treated with the dignity and respect that we all deserve. They want to be included in the decisions that the owners make about the place of business. They're the folks that do the work, and they're asking to sit at the table, to negotiate, to talk about some of the things that affect and concern them, and to share the information about how the business is run and about what's going on there. And all they're asking is to just be considered. They don't have demands, just to be heard. So the owners are resisting this. The owners are engaged in a process of looking for corporate labor-busting law firms who will tie this thing up, when all they have to do is recognize that these people want to be heard. So, if that's something that you can support, if that's something that you feel is important, come on out to the picket line and let those folks know and meet and talk with them. Thanks much.
Now, give us that time again and the place for the Saturn Cafe, PJ.
Saturn Cafe is on Mission. If you're not sure of the exact location, I don't know what the precise cross street is. It's in between the major cross streets of Bay and Laurel, very close to Laurel. And it's going to be from 6 p.m. to midnight on this Saturday and noon to midnight on Sunday. Hope to see you there.
Hey, BJ, you're a wobbly here, right? You're a local, one of that vicious group that carries on the tradition of goodness knows what. What is the tradition of the wobblies?
Well, first off, I would like to say that we are not indeed a vicious group. We do try to speak out strongly on the things that concern us. The last big public demonstration that we were involved in was a sleep out around Labor Day to make the connection between the unemployed and the employed. One of the reasons that wages in this town can be kept so low is that any worker just has to look out the door of their workplace and see what awaits them on the street if their employer doesn't like the way that they respond to the demands that are placed upon them or if they speak up. And so one of the things that we tried to do last year was make that connection. In terms of the IWW and our illustrious history, well, there's a lot of historical stuff that people can go out and dig up. People can get in touch with us at 427-4597 if they'd like to hear more directly from us about who we are and what we're doing. We'd be happy to share some of the information we have, but mostly at this point we're trying to make some current history in connecting up with the labor struggles in this town and making some of the connections that mainstream labor may not quite be ready to make.
Give that number again.
427-4597 is the Wobbly voicemail.
How often do you guys meet?
We have several meetings a month. There is a regular general branch meeting, and I would just, if folks are interested in getting involved, give a call to that number, and we'll be getting back to you.
The number again is
427-4597.
Yes,
indeed, the Wobblies, the largest demonstration in support of the right to sleep. That happened since 1990, when there was a large sleep out at City Hall by the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep. At that time, they sought a campground, which the City Council turned down. And later on, after many occupations and continuing pressure, the campground was opened, as I mentioned earlier, in 1994 in the summer. Although, in fact, people have been using the Back 40, the River Street Campground, the open-air shelter for years, and simply not asking the Citizens Committee for the Homeless for permission. Citizens Committee for the Homeless has both its positive and negative aspects, but one of the concerns some of us have on the outside is that their interest in attracting grants may be more than their loyalty to the basic needs of homeless people at the current time. Thus, in 1989, Page, Smith, and others disbanded the Citizens Committee meetings when homeless people actually showed up and sought support for the campout that was happening at the River Street, on the River Street property that they later purchased. Citizens Committee for the Homeless actually purchased that property from the city or got a lease on it, I'm not quite sure which, in, I believe it was 1991. And as soon as they got it, they got a letter, sent a letter to the police authorizing them to remove trespassers. They claimed this was just for their liability, but then they used it to drive 23 people away in the summer of 1991 because they said they wanted to build a thing called Community House, which was a low-income transitional housing, perhaps, or just low-income housing. But they never got anywhere, or so far have gotten very, it's not clear where they've gotten in terms of getting this project actually going. It's been a constant excuse for them to get waivers from the city, funding, et cetera, et cetera. I think the most latest move is a move by Paul Lee to secure trailers from Stanford. And there's nothing wrong with this kind of activity except where they use it as a pretext to drive away homeless people, to disempower them, to somehow usurp their authority, although they claim to be acting in the name of the homeless people, Citizens Committee for the Homeless. This is frequently the case, that programs that are created because homeless people did protest are then hijacked, and the folks who come in thereafter simply become kind of institutional poverty pimps. And I'm not saying this has happened entirely or substantially with Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and I'm always hoping that even if it has happened, that there's still a structure there that allows for a kind of change and evolution. But I think people should be quite wary in dealing with, well, in placing a lot of faith in groups of, well, groups like Citizens Committee for the Homeless and institutionally run structures that, frankly, homeless people have had a lot of trouble with and a lot of disappointment from. Just as if you're a deadhead and you go to the St. Francis Soup Kitchen, or at least this was the case until about a month and a half ago, you couldn't get served food there if Lee Loboa didn't like you. If she didn't like your tie-dye, if you were a local homeless activist, if you had been involved in the downtown demonstrations, well, you don't get to eat, buddy. That's the bottom line. And this from a Catholic soup kitchen that, you know, gets its donations by posing as the great friend of the poor. What's important here is not to badmouth these groups, but to ensure that they are fair, that they don't discriminate, that they do open their doors. And similarly, I've been critical of various council members, such as Council Member Mike Rotkin, who, by the way, is to be commended, along with the rest of the council, for turning down a change-making machine that the Downtown Commission wanted placed at Cathcart and Pacific. And that came up on the council agenda about a week and a half ago. Rotkin and others properly saw that this was just an open invitation to a confrontation, because that place is where Food Not Bombs serves food. And one of the downtown ordinances is you cannot sit down within 50 feet, not 53 feet, as the Sentinel said, but 50 feet of a change-making machine. So, having seen the carnage produced by their laws last summer, or last May, with the downtown ordinances, and realizing it doesn't look too good in the press when pregnant women are getting beaten up and other guys are getting smashed in the ribs and people are being jailed for the incredible crime of sitting down, Rotkin, Kennedy, Yokoyama, others, all decided, well, with the exception, I think it was Mary Beth Campbell, put your change machine further down the road. But we shouldn't be deceived by this. We shouldn't be deceived that the council is still as reactionary as it comes when it deals with the civil liberties of basic homeless people. Now, it's true they haven't instructed the police to drive people out of town. I suppose that we should qualify what we're saying and recognize that it could be worse. And that, of course, has been the basis on which I've often gotten criticism from others. Why don't you, you know, work with these progressive council members? They're, you know, if you don't, look what you're going to get in their place. Mary Beth Campbell clones, you know, Rittenhouse lookalikes, John Mahaney types. These are all council members from a past incarnation who were on the council in the last five years who are self-identified conservatives or moderates or non-progressives. Well, the sad fact is that the progressives, as they call themselves, have controlled the city council for the last decade and a half, virtually. And Rotkin has been mayor, and he's cycled in and out, and Wormhout has cycled in and out as mayor, and they come and they go and they come again, and it's like they have permanent positions on the city council. And it's not that I don't agree, for example, with Supervisor Wormhout on some of the things I've heard secondhand that she supports. Like, as I said, she opposes a curfew for youth, if that's true. I certainly applaud that. She gave us some good votes on the question of marijuana enforcement by the sheriffs. I applaud her for that. Unfortunately, when she was the mayor of this town, she had her police steal homeless garb. She had her police taking homeless bedding. She had her police arresting a woman who was sleeping on her doorstep simply for being there because it was the coldest night of the year. She was trying to get a program opened up, and Marty wouldn't do it. Now, we all have past mistakes, and her biggest, of course, was sending out the riot squad to arrest people for serving free food at the town clock in January of 1989. That was probably the number one boner. But people learn from these mistakes, and she later that year got together with Calamity Jane Immler, one of the main protesters, and they established what then became the free meal. And so people can learn from their mistakes if protesters are patient enough in the sense of persistent enough. You don't patience without protest leads you nowhere, I'm afraid, usually. But why attack the progressives? Well, unfortunately, because they have the power, and they are misusing it or not using it or abusing it in cases of homeless issues. You'll hear a lot of self-preening and primping and how wonderful they are in terms of their homeless services, and gosh, they're spending another $100,000 to take care of the crack at the day center. In the meantime, they're still funding police to arrest homeless people for sleeping outside. They're still funding downtown ordinances that make it illegal for people to sit down to peacefully ask for a dime after dark. Makes it illegal for you to sit down and ask for a dime during the day peacefully if you're in a group of two or if you're seated. I mean, it's a series of preposterous laws. And I focus on the laws because they become such a sticking point here, such an obvious exemplification of what they are and what they do in terms of homeless issues. But even before those laws, police were essentially making similar decisions without benefit of law, and more important, without benefit of check from the progressives on the city council. The only voice speaking out against that for a time was Scott Kennedy, until he turned sharply to the right and emasculated the Civilian Police Review Board and supported these anti-homeless downtown ordinances. For a period of time, Scott Kennedy was a liberal voice in the wilderness, a voice for sanity and reason, when everybody wanted, when the rest of the council wanted to fence in the town clock and turn it into a closed park so that they could get rid of an ongoing peace vigil there. Kennedy used humor and wit and common sense to defeat that proposal in part, although actually, as you may know, the town clock is now a park. You don't see much green in there, but the reason it's a park is so that it can have park closing hours. And so the police will have a pretext to arrest people who sleep there for being in violation of the park closing hours. They would also, of course, be in violation of the sleeping ban, even if they slept outside the park. But just sitting in the monument after 1 o'clock is now a crime. Sitting in that town clock area is now a crime after 1 o'clock, thanks to a majority of our city council, the progressive city council. Now, this is not to say that the progressives are all bad. You know, I mean, there have been some positive steps, and we hope that there will be some more. But from the point of view of the folks on the street, and from my point of view, positive steps are, they ain't being stepped. The shoes are not moving. The feet are in bed at home, or they're toasting themselves with orange juice and politically correct cafes, but they are not doing the necessary work, taking the necessary obvious steps to decriminalize poverty and to stand against the tide of prejudice and ignorance that has overtaken this country around homeless issues. And again, it's not, as I said, so much the country. I believe it to be the politicians who are using these issues. In San Francisco, the populace voted down a sit-on-the-sidewalk law last November. In Berkeley, they voted up a law, but it was by a very narrow margin. And all those areas that actually contained the areas that would be affected voted the law down. It was the rich people in the hills that voted the law in, the Proposition O, which, by the way, was thrown out by a federal judge in mid-April. And currently, the law is not being enforced, and it instead of it's being enforced, what we have happening in Berkeley is harassment along the lines that they used to do here in Santa Cruz. They kind of make up their own laws. They go along. A cop sees somebody there he doesn't think should be there, and he kind of whips out a new statute. The statute they're using in Berkeley is a thing about sidewalk furniture that was supposed to apply to merchants. But a merchant has never been cited under this law. Instead, they find a homeless person sitting on a milk crate, wham bang, it's a ticket. They can't cite the person for asking for spare change because the Orrick decision, Judge Orrick's, actually, I think it's the Blair decision by Judge Orrick, found that it is legal to ask for spare change. Proposition O, which made it illegal and said, well, we're making it illegal, but because we're not making it illegal to ask for a dime, we're only saying it's illegal to, unless you have certain time, place, and manner restrictions, and after all, we have to, that's the reasonable regulation, yak, 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 and blah, blah, blah. But that was thrown out by a federal judge, Claudia Wilkins, about a couple weeks ago. And so they're currently, it is quite legal to ask for spare change. In Santa Cruz, actually, that is also the case, in spite of the city council law. No panhandling cases that I'm aware of have ever been taken to trial in the last 2 or 3 years. They have found people guilty of panhandling, but only if they were foolish enough to plea bargain, which, as you know, is the major way to lose your rights if you're being tried locally. Generally speaking, the best thing to do is to go for a jury trial and work on it. Your public defender is not going to help you that much. Go down, read the law, talk to people who've been through the same experience on the streets, and be prepared to spend hours in the law library if you want to prosecute and defend yourself, or even if you want to hound dog your public defender to make sure that she or he is doing the appropriate job. But that's really a matter for another time. Matter for another hour, another one of Bathrobespierre's broadsides, which will probably be blasting your way in the future. We're going to try to have some folks on to talk to you about what you can do if you are arrested or ticketed for sleeping outside. How do you fight your ticket? What do you do when you go into court in terms of your options as far as pleading guilty, no contest, not guilty? Can you tape record your proceedings? What do you do if a judge starts denying your rights? Is it good to bring a friend along? You want to go high profile or low profile? All these kinds of questions, which are decisions that many of us have to face who deal with these kinds of harassment tickets, will be the subject of a future program. And if you're interested in being on Free Radio, if you have comments about my show, please give a call to me at 423-HUFF. 423-4833, and let me know, and I'll get back to you. Or just, hey, leave me an anonymous blast. I can take that, too. I want to know your reaction to this show. And, hey, if it's interesting, I'll even put it on the air if you'd like. I'll mention it in my next broadcast. So you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. And this is Bathrobespierre Robert from Bathrobespierre's Broadsides, about to sign off. Here comes the music. You have a good week.